Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. A wall clock, words appear, a Netflix original documentary. University of California, San Francisco Medical Center, a Telling Pictures production, in association with Peer Review and Sidewinder Films. A hospital technician at a bank of screens. A Rob Epstein, Jeffrey Creedman film. The title appears, Endgame. The letters dissolve as the screen goes black. A bald woman in a hospital bed, a woman and doctor beside her.
Where are we?
San Francisco.
San Francisco, right? What month?
February.
Who's the president? Okay, you don't have to say it. Who was our last president?
Yeah.
Barack Obama.
Exactly.
And this one today is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
How old is your son?
8. Such a funny guy.
He's a funny guy.
Palliative care team.
She's a 45-year-old woman originally from Iran. Her husband's Hamid. She was a midwife.
Wow.
In the context of talking about being a midwife, she talked a lot about natural death and natural birth and sort of linking those two things.
I also wonder just about a hospice.
Steve Pantelat, MD.
I mean, I think it may be hard for them because of where they are mentally.
I had some conversation with her and her mother exactly about that. And mother came outside the room afterwards with me and said, basically, hospice means death. Do not talk about it with her.
I think your insight was a good one, Dina. I think it's healthy people who think about how they want to die and sick people who think about how they want to live.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to
all that advanced
fantasize about the beach and the mountains and and then you get sick, and it's like, I just want to live.
Later, the doctor enters a hospital room. A woman, Kim Anderson, lays in bed surrounded by staff and family members.
Nice to meet you. I'm the doctor on the palliative care team, Steve Pantelat.
Have you heard of palliative care before?
Sure.
We have palliative care up at home.
Well, can I ask you what you understand palliative care to be?
Sort of end-of-life care.
Yeah, but we think of palliative care as helping people live as well as possible for as long as possible.
We work together. It's doctors and nurses and social workers and chaplains
focused on
not just the disease, but the whole person.
To really help people with their symptoms, making sure they have information they need to make good decisions about their care, support for the patient and family, emotional, psychological, spiritual support.
A man at the bedside.
We're sort of in a spot where we're not really ready for hospice, I don't think, anyway, and I think she thinks the same thing.
When you say not ready, tell me what your thoughts are.
What are your thoughts?
Well, to me, I guess part of that is...
He appears emotional. Kim takes his hand.
Like, very, very end of life. Hospice has a label of, oh, that's it, kiss it, goodbye. But this is more help you transition.
Totally.
I've been a nurse for 40 years. Patients come into the hospital and die, and that's not how I wanted to do it. So I wanted to stay home.
A steep residential street in San Francisco. Bicycles whisk by a white 19th century townhouse. A sign outside reads, Zen Hospice Project. Inside, a staircase with an ornate wooden balustrade. Upstairs at a hospital bedside, a man with a beard drums the bed rail as the man in bed keeps rhythm. A bedridden elderly woman holds the hand of a caregiver. In another room, a patient is spoon-fed. Downstairs, a man with prosthetic legs and an amputated left arm, Dr. B.J. Miller, leads a caregiver training session.
Two people can have very much the same circumstance, same disease perhaps, and one person sort of taking it in stride and the other person is just can't accommodate the illness, can't accommodate the diagnosis. I'll say in my own experience, you know, it took me several years before I stopped comparing my new body to the old body. But when I did stop comparing, when this became the whole me, not me missing stuff, I stopped suffering. My identity had accommodated the facts of my life. So I like thinking about suffering as a gap. like a wedge, the gap between the world you want and the world you got. You know, that to me sort of sums it up very nicely.
Upstairs, Dr. Miller and a nurse outside the room of a frail man in bed.
So Bruce, 66-year-old, he just arrived on Friday.
From UC?
From UCSF. That day that I went to see him, he had made the decision with the medical providers that he was going to stop dialysis. So it was a pretty crucial moment. Mm-hmm. And then I came in to talk to him about Zen Hospice Project, and he lit up.
I heard you're eating again.
Yeah.
How is that?
There's a good kitchen for you.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everyone is good.
Yeah. Do you have questions for us? You know, I'm also a doctor, so if you have medical questions or anything else, or anything that's not happening here that you want to happen, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And you've met a bunch of volunteers by now, nurses.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think you're kind of popular. I don't know.
That's what I heard,
just
Bruce.
Kind of heard through the grapevine.
Whoa.
Later, Dr. Miller with a tabby cat on his lap.
What really galvanized my interest in going into medicine and being a physician was my experience as a disabled person. In other words, living with illness and adapting to illness and dealing with all the things that we can't control and trying to refashion ourselves when shit goes wrong. That's what took me through medical school and into palliative care. The basic principle of Zen Hospice Project, part of the muscle is that you don't run away from hard stuff. You don't run away from suffering.
A volunteer sits with a patient, Pat Harris.
I started out this year, you know, not feeling well, little weight gain, temperature up, a little out of breath, just in a great deal of pain. So they get me to the hospital, and they get me registered, and they start trying to manage the pain. So we get the pain down to like zero, and I start feeling better. And they diagnose me with fibroids. But they send me to a gynecologist that was a specialist. She said, yeah, you do have fibroids, but that's hardly your issue. Your issue is that your uterus is a cancerous mass. It's basically incurable. But at any rate, I'm doing good.
How are you?
I am.
I mean, the story's so fresh, isn't it?
Yeah. I am doing good. I feel better more than I feel bad. Mm-hmm. But I'm here now with someone who can watch the symptoms with me and understand what's right or wrong with it, and give me medication and monitor it so that I don't have to do it all by myself.
Back at the hospital, Dr. Pantelat and his staff at Mitra's bedside with her family.
There's no right or wrong answer here.
Exactly.
You know, some families, some patients in this situation will say, I want to be home, I want to be with my family, I want to figure out how to get good caregiving at home, I don't want more treatment. And that's a very legitimate decision. And there are other people in this situation who say, if there's a medicine that might make my symptoms a little better, might help me live a few more weeks, mm-hmm. I would like to give it a try.
One choice, I mean, to be clear, is to stop all active cancer treatment, meaning, you know, no drugs attacking the cancer.
Husband Hamid.
So she's a big fighter. She has some concern. She doesn't want to be disabled, but we are not there yet. You know, I mean, still we have chance to fight. And I think we should fight.
Mitra's mother, Vaji, subtitles.
Right now she's disabled, and she cannot walk.
Obviously,
you think
she's
after
not...
this procedure is gonna walk? What percent? There is no hope.
Then I don't
ask
know.
Ask her. She can answer.
Okay, and if she cannot talk?
Then you have to decide.
Okay, and but
then it's not.
So we're not going to let her go. Do you want to let her go? Is she inconvenient for people?
No, just I don't want to see her like that. She's suffering. That's it.
She's resting.
Does she seem worse to you?
Yes, very worse.
Than when she came to the hospital?
Yes. One night she couldn't sleep very well. I mean, comfortably.
That's very distressing, isn't it?
It's hurting me.
Yeah, of course.
I am mother. You are not mother to know what is going on in my heart. And now she cannot walk even.
So I'll tell you, the way we approach this is really trying to get back to Mitra. And if she was clear in her thinking, seeing herself in the bed the way she is right now, what decision would she make about the treatment?
She wouldn't like that. She wouldn't like that.
She wouldn't take the treatment, you think. But Hamid thinks she would.
Hamid nods. In the bed, Mitra sleeps. Back at the hospice, RN Jolene Scarella sits with patient Pat Harris.
The whole idea behind chemo is to shrink the cancer, to slow it down.
I want to make sure that, you know, like we were talking about on Friday, this weighing, this benefit to you versus the harm to you.
Yes.
And I know it's a mystery.
Yes.
You never really know, but we could certainly ponder it and think about it.
All right.
Because, you know, I know how you felt when you went to that first
That first appointment. Chemo, I couldn't believe how tired I was. Mm-hmm. I had not been tired like that ever before.
RN Sue Ann Mark.
How would you know that this is the right path for you?
Anything that cuts the time, it's what we won't do. So I'm counting on that.
And in terms of the quality of that time, no matter what decision you make, what's most important for you for however many days, weeks, months that you may have left?
Just take each day at a time. Mm-hmm. Just take each day at a time. Mm-hmm. Every moment is still a gift. Yeah. You're still here.
Yeah.
And that in itself is a gift.
Back at the hospital, at Mitra's bedside, Vaji shows a photo on her cell phone.
Old picture from Mitra. Mitra with husband. 2015.
Mitra reaches out for Hamid's hand. Hamid shows a photo on his cell.
Persian New Year.
A healthy Mitra with Hamid. Vaji shows a photo.
This is Mitra.
A smiling Mitra with black hair. Hamid shows a photo of Mitra and her young son.
Aaron and Mitra.
He's always hanging around mommy's neck.
In the hallway, Vaji paces outside Mitra's room. Inside, Hamid steps away from Mitra's bed. Vaji continues to pace. A female staff member walks down the hall. The screen goes black. Medical staff at Mitra's bedside with Dr. Pantelat.
I wanted to let you know, Mitra, that today is my last day here. Next week, Dr. Ilya will be covering for me. I think you might have met him before, the bald doctor with the glasses. And I'll keep tabs on you, okay?
Mitra doesn't respond. Vaji sits nearby. Subtitles.
Your sister coming from Switzerland.
When?
Next week. You think she's gonna make it?
I hope so.
Vaji appears overwhelmed with emotion as she wipes her tears. In a boardroom, Mitra and Hamid meet with Trevor Bivona, MD, and Dr. Pantelat.
We've been dealt a hand of cards. And we could wish we had different cards or we could play a different game, but this is where we are right now.
One of the things I want to discuss with you today as part of the research program, and Mitra's already been a part of this research program, is to try to understand what happened in the cancer. And after someone dies, we have the ability to do an autopsy and to try to take the cancers out and study them in great detail.
How are you going to do it? Just explain for me. You're gonna open all the body, you're gonna take some of body. How are you gonna do it?
It's in some ways kind of like an operation when somebody's alive. So, you cut the body open, take out organs where the cancer is located, closer back up, like surgery. And of course, then you proceed with whatever arrangements you would want to have with her under normal circumstances.
Vaji and Hamid appear at a loss for words.
Is the hard part thinking about the autopsy or just thinking about it means that Mitra has died?
No, I want to know, just, you cannot answer, it's okay. If you were in this situation, what would you do that? Would you do that? Your wife, your sister, or yourself, you would do that?
If you're asking me, I would absolutely do it.
Yes. What about
There's
you?
There's no question.
Honest, be honest with me.
If it were me, I would do it. But I think it's very personal.
Yeah, I would do by myself, for myself. But I cannot imagine for my kids, you know. It's a little hard, but
yes.
In my...
It's very hard. It's not
I am
hard.
Thinking... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to help people because I am so suffering. I don't want other mothers suffer like me. But somehow I cannot see my...
Dr. Bavona comforts her. Now meet her in bed with her son, Aaron. Dr. Ilya nearby, Vaji seated.
Yes!
Okay, time for us to visit.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can sit there.
Holy shoot! Wow! Somebody special.
Oh, you are special. What are you doing today?
Subtitles.
I promise to be okay. I promise to be fine. But I am not. I'm not keeping my promise.
Mm-hmm. How's your mood? How's your mood today?
Much better.
Much better?
Everything has been better. Was better.
Vaji shakes her head and looks down. At Mitra's bedside, her young son Aaron looks unsure. At the hospice, Jolene and Sue Ann sit with Pat Harris.
All I could say was, I'm at your mercy here, I'm at your hands, so if this is the best idea,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to trust you.
You know, when I saw your face in that meeting, when he said to you, what we might be able to give you is 4 to 6 more months, maybe. You know, that was just deep to have to think about that, deciding, okay, do I go down the chemo route, not knowing if it's going to make me feel worse, if at the end, will it give me more time? You know, is it the time that I want?
I want to go forward.
Okay.
Chemo is a full-time job.
Okay.
So let's say if you started on Monday, the next few days, you're probably going to start feeling crummy.
Okay.
About this time, you're going to start to feel a little better.
Okay.
It's a relatively normal week. And then guess what? It's been 21 days. So
wow.
That following Monday,
uh-huh.
You go back and you start everything over again.
Over again.
Everything is going to be dependent upon how well you handle this first drug. Because this first drug is a little bit of a doozy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. Cancer itself and chemo on top of it, it's going to throw you curveballs.
It's mm-hmm. been a total new way of life. I think of it as the asteroid in the dark, and it's just shooting off some big rocks. And I'm amazed when I look up and I go, it missed me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it missed me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still here. You know, it could have taken me out, but I'm still here.
The hospital, Mitra, Vaji, Dr. Bavona.
I'm glad that you ate more today. That's a good
mm-hmm.
sign. You look like you have a little more color today.
Subtitles.
This is my major plan, to be able to walk.
Well, that's a good goal to
this
keep in your mind.
Just being independent and being in a positive mood.
Mm-hmm. She's trying very hard.
I try. But I feel like I'm against two walls.
You have to try to stay.
Vaji opens a package of dates.
For the road, one for you.
I'll take you. I'll take
one
or two more.
We'll
have them tonight for dessert.
You know, you have
better. That's enough. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
One more.
Okay, one
maybe
more.
You drink wine.
Tonight.
I don't know if you want to have
tonight.
Kid.
Yeah.
If you are thinking about
yeah.
having kid.
Yeah.
If you and your wife eat one date a day, your baby, 100% is gonna be boy.
Oh yeah.
Boy?
I don't believe that,
but they say.
Oh,
I just thought.
Is that what you did? Did you eat a date?
I don't know.
She eats a date.
Okay, Mitra, I'm gonna go. Have a wonderful night with your sister tonight.
Thank you very
and
much.
And your husband.
It's gonna be a great night tonight.
Dawn over the hills of San Francisco. In the hospital, Hamid and a dark-haired woman enter Mitra's room. Subtitles. She goes to Mitra's bed and hugs her.
This is Azita. These are all the team of my new friends.
I see, I see.
Of 2017. What do you think?
Vaji.
They like me very much. The mic is in front of my mouth only.
Azita.
Later they will translate everything.
Vaji.
Let them do it. No problem.
Hamid.
You know they will put subtitles on everything.
Vaji.
No problem. Let them do it. I speak the truth.
Azita hugs her mother and holds tight, appearing emotional as she bites her own thumb. The screen goes black. Sunrise over San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge in the distance. In the offices of the USCF Symptom Management Service, Dr. Miller walks down the hall and opens a door into a waiting area to greet an older woman, Tekla Hammond, and her husband.
Nice shoes.
Thank you. Any lunch?
Not yet. No? Let's talk about that shortness of breath, but the bigger reason to be here today is really to continue to talk through this crazy thing called death.
Yeah, you gave me an assignment.
Yep.
You told me to make friends with death.
Yeah.
I have failed the assignment.
Yeah, okay.
Failed.
Okay.
I love to live.
Yeah.
I am not accepting this.
Friends with death may be pretty tough, but maybe what I more meant would have been to have some sort of relationship with this subject.
Okay.
It doesn't need to be friendly at all. Just so that it's less scary than this unknown thing in the closet that we never look at, never see, never touch.
You know, I think the scary part is the unknown and the lack of control.
Yeah. Is the unknown what it's going to feel like to actually be dying or what it's going to be like to be dead?
Both.
Because I don't think that, from where I said, I'm not sure that we can know what it's like to be dead from here. You tell me if you feel otherwise. But given that that's not possible, next up would be, okay, if we can't change that, well, maybe we can get used to it a little bit. So maybe in terms of the being dead part, maybe that's our goal, is to kind of get used to this idea of being able to hold this idea of not knowing, holding the mystery.
And that makes sense.
That, I think, is it's a more realistic goal than solving that mystery.
Yeah.
Does that also maybe
trusting a little bit. It could be terrible, but it could be wonderful. This part of my life is wonderful. And who would have thought?
I will tell you, Tekla, and from doing this work and being near people who are at the very, very end, everything I've ever seen would suggest that wherever we're going, whatever abyss we're meeting, ain't so bad.
Really?
All I can say is from what I've seen.
Yeah.
And people in the final moments crossing over, and from reports of people who have gone and come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that proves anything, but it's just maybe worth noting that just empirically, I don't know that it's so bad.
I think there has to be something to those reports.
Seems likely. They're pretty dang consistent.
They are consistent.
And maybe it's enough at least to warrant a little leap of faith on your part.
Yeah.
Tekla appears apprehensive. On the street, Dr. Miller attaches his prosthetic hand to the left handlebar of a motorcycle, kickstarts the engine with his prosthetic left leg, and drives off.
I did brush up against death myself.
In his office.
Sophomore year of college, Princeton University, screwing around on a commuter train with some friends, just parked. Not moving, we didn't think we were doing anything that daring. But I had a metal watch on, and when I climbed up on top of the train, it was one of those trains that the wires run overhead, like the buses in San Francisco, for example. And when I stood up on the train, I was close enough to the, what's called the pantograph, the metal thing that attaches the train to the wires. And electricity arced to my watch, entered the arm, and blew down and out my feet. So that was that. It was, you know, spontaneous, immediate, crazy experience. The amputations were surgical in the coming days and weeks. But yeah, so I lost both legs below the knee and my left arm below the elbow. I was 19.
The hospital. In a conference room, medical staff meet with Hamid, Azita, and Vaji.
What is the situation with Mitra?
From a short-term perspective, she's looking better. We also know that the underlying cancer is unchanged.
We've gone through this so many times. Every time she goes, one drug goes down, and again she comes back up. I cannot just believe this is the end game, because I have seen this before.
What we know for sure is that she has a very limited time to live, regardless of what we do.
Very limited time. So it's
I would say probably, it's really hard, I mean, to give numbers, I would say.
Yeah.
It can be from days to weeks. If she gets out of this...
Subtitles Vaji.
Why are you crying, Azita? It's not just her. We all die.
Azita.
Let the doctor talk. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know her better than anybody else, so we need to understand where she would like to be. So something that I know you're strongly against, but I want to make sure, I want to put you on the table, inpatient hospice. So... I see Vicky's not saying
no. No, her mom doesn't believe it.
Don't say that.
Why you feel so strongly against that?
Until end of last breathing, I want to be with my baby, and I can take care of him, either here or either home. I don't care.
So transferring at home, there would be the need for somebody that will take care of her physical needs.
If I have to clean her, that would be my honor.
No, somebody come at home. Why you refuse this opportunity?
No, nobody says not to.
Yeah, she does. No.
We don't have to make a decision today.
Exactly, I think.
I just want to make sure we don't have to make a decision today. Sorry, Vicky.
Vaji covers her face. At Mitra's hospital bedside, Azita and Hamid. Subtitles, Hamid to Mitra.
Do you want some chocolate?
He feeds her the chocolate. Mitra smiles.
Yes, you are my love.
He places a ring on her finger. Azita.
It's your ring. By the power vested in me, I now pronounce you man and wife. You can now kiss the bride, and the bride can kiss the groom.
آقا میتونی خانم را ببوزی؟ خانم شما آقا را ببوز.
Hamid leans down and kisses Mitra. In the hall, Hamid on his phone.
It can either be home, health, or hospice, or the house. What can we do?
Thank you.
Because they are asking, where does she want to die? Poor Aaron found out too. He says, if mommy dies, who will take care of me?
Yes, mama was about.
I said, I will. Grandpa, grandma, uncle.
Nearby, Vaji plays with a baby. Hamid hangs up.
Okay. Bye.
At Mitra's bedside. Mitra.
I'm anxious about something. I don't know what it is.
Vaji.
You don't know? You're anxious because you saw everyone and you were happy because of the excitement.
Mitra.
No, Mama.
In the hall. Azita to Vaji.
It's the end of her life. Don't tell her what to eat. Let her not be strong. It's not important. This is how it will be if you take her home. You'll get upset and you will die. She'll die and you'll be next. You shouldn't do it.
They hug, crying. Vaji.
My dear, I wish I was the one to go.
Azita.
Don't say that.
Vaji.
I'm so tired.
Azita.
I'm going home now. They are saying we should go. I don't want to cry anymore.
Azita wipes her tears. In Mitra's room, Vaji sits at the bedside. Mitra appears to be sleeping. Now Hamid stands by the bed. In a hospital meeting room, Vaji and Hamid consult with medical staff, including Dr. Andrew Lai.
We all want to make sure she doesn't suffer. But at the same time, we wanted to clarify what happens when she dies. And I'm going to be very blunt about that. When her time comes, when she does die, we're going to continue to treat her well during that time, but we'd really strongly recommend allowing her to just naturally die on her own and not attempt CPR, not try to put in a breathing tube, those kind of things.
Naturally.
Yeah.
It's hard, but...
It's hard. And again, we hope nothing is going to happen anytime soon. We don't anticipate that. But I think this was just another good natural time to think about it.
And I appreciate everybody's help. Unfortunately, all these good things, still, Mitra is leaving us. And we believe in it now. I mean, I still believe in miracle. To be honest with you, this last medicine, I hope it works. I don't want to let her go.
At Mitra's bedside, her family, including Aaron.
How are you massaging, Mama?
Scratch your head.
You like this?
Mitra is spoon-fed. Hamid watches as Aaron strokes his mother's bald head. Hamid takes Mitra's hand and kisses it. Aaron kisses it, then Hamid again. Hamid looks at Mitra laying in bed. He leans down and kisses her lips. He strokes her cheek and presses his forehead against hers. At the hospice, Pat receives a foot rub in her room, while in another room, a sleeping patient is sung to by a circle of women.
There's nothing inherently medical about dying. It's much larger than medicine. It's purely human. Part of the mission is to keep all of this couched in humanity, not medical science or social science, but really a full arch of humanity.
Dr. Miller.
Kindness, total openness, vulnerability, exchange. I mean, this is potent stuff.
A female staff member wrings out a cloth and washes the chest of a frail-looking Bruce Chu. She washes his fingers. At the hospital, two women from the palliative care team outside Mitra's room.
One of the things that needs to be clarified is that transition from the monitors and all mm-hmm. that. So I'm waiting for the primary medical team to come and have that discussion with them before I take out the IV pole.
She's been watching those monitors and having those machines around for so long, it's a hard transition to all of a sudden to say we're taking them away. It's
right.
Like, no, this is not important anymore.
Right.
We want to focus on how she's feeling, what she needs.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good way to put
it. In the hall, Hamid. How are you
doing? The way she wanted me to be. Happy. Do the right thing. That's what she wants me to do.
Outside Mitra's room, a sign reads, "Please honor family private time." The door opens. Hamid looks down the hall and goes back inside. Later, a female medical staff member goes into the room. Time lapse. The door is ajar. Lights flicker on inside. Later, a female medical staff person goes into the room. Hamid follows her to the door, peeks inside, and paces the hall. Time lapse. Vaji comes out of the room and rubs her left shoulder. She limps down the hall. Later, the hall lights have dimmed. Vaji has made her way down to the far end of the hall. Time lapse as Vaji makes her way back up the hall. She disappears into Mitra's darkened room. A staff person walks down the dark, deserted hall. The screen goes black. Morning, two male staff members wheel a long, black, coffin-like box out of Mitra's room. Hamid steps out of the room, followed by Vaji and another man. Hamid follows the man with the coffin-like box down the hall as the other man places his arm around Vaji's shoulder, joined by another man following behind. The screen goes black. The photo of Mitra smiling. Caption, Mitra, 1971 to 2017. The screen goes black. Pat Harris. Caption, Pat died at Zen Hospice Guesthouse before having chemotherapy. Kim Anderson. Caption, Kim died at home 3 weeks after leaving the hospital. Tekla Hammond. Caption, Tekla died at home with her husband. Bruce Chu. Caption, Bruce died at Zen Hospice Guesthouse. The screen goes black. Dr. Miller.
When someone dies, we'll all gather around the body. And then you sprinkle the body with flowers, you know? This is so beautiful, so simple. It's a way to kind of wrap our heads around the fact that this person's gone now. And so that final parting image as they're ushering in their grief is this flower-laden, honored body. It's such a... That sprinkles your grief with beauty. Grief ain't easy, but it can be poignant, gorgeous. We are wired to run away from death, but dying is a part of life.
The screen goes black. The sun rises as fog rolls into San Francisco Bay. Credits. Directed and produced by Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman. Produced by William Hirsch, Rebecca Ferguson. Cinematography by Rob Epstein, Rebecca Ferguson. Edited by Jeffrey Friedman, Rob Epstein. Music by T. Griffin, Matei Papp. Executive producers, Dr. Stephen Ungerleiter, Shoshana Ungerleiter, MD, and David Ulich. Also, Jason Spinger and Koff, Zana Lawrence, Lisa Nishimura. A Telling Pictures production in association with Peer Review and Sidewinder Films. Netflix original documentary, copyright 2018. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.